The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Welcome back to The Fighter versus The Writer. I am Damon Martin. He is UFC legend Matt Brown. Matt, it is the start of a new week. It is UFC 295 Fight Week. Are you excited? Are you excited for Fight Week? Is it still exciting?
No, always excited for Fight Week. Well, I don't know. I don't really get excited till the day of the fight, I guess, or the night of the fight. Now, yeah. Hey, man, it's a good week, bro. We got the clock set back an hour, got an extra hour of sleep. We get huge badass fights this weekend. We had at least a card to watch last weekend.
Sort of.
Yeah, we got to watch the classic Lay and Pray.
You know, it's been so long since I used that term, and it's so funny you say that. It's been so long since I've used that term in MMA because that just doesn't really happen as much these days. And Gilson Almeida, what he did to Derek Lewis was classic lay and pray. Like, I'm not going to knock him for winning, dude. Like, you get the job done, you won. He absolutely did win the fight. But it was also one of the most bizarre, like, I think I called it, like, the most bizarre dominant performance ever. Because, like, he took him down at will. He moved into mount, like, 9 times. And yet he didn't really do much damage. And, like, after the second round, he stopped going for submissions. It was the weirdest, like, he was completely dominant. But yet he didn't really do a lot with it. It was the weirdest performance.
Yeah, it was almost like, you know, the when we think of lay and pray, we think of, like, take him down and sit and guard. Right, like he was even able to get to mount. Like Derek Lewis grabbing his wrist stopped him from being able to punch or elbow or anything. It was actually bizarre. That's a good way to put it. I think we've seen Gilson Almeida is going to be a problem though. Now whether he's going to be an exciting problem, whether he puts on the fights to get that where Dana gets excited and says, we're going to put you in there for the title shot or even like a Surreal Gone fight, like he's calling out, which everybody seems to be calling out now because they know they can take him down. I don't know if that's going to happen, but you know, that guy has lots. The weirdest thing was I never heard this, but they said he grew up boxing.
Yeah, like he came in and had that striking background and obviously like he also has the jiu-jitsu background. But yeah, it's weird. Like he always seemed like a well-rounded fighter. And listen, I don't blame you for not wanting to go out there and stand in front of Derek Lewis. Like I get it. Yeah. But to me, it was just weird because you keep taking him down and you're not doing much with it. Like he was just in like, it's almost like he didn't want to take chances because he knew Derek could escape and get back to his feet, which he did a couple of times. Credit to Derek for doing it. But like when you're in mounts, like that's supposed to be one of the most dominant positions you can have on the ground. And yet he wasn't really dropping punches or elbows. Like it was really weird.
Right.
It's
right.
Almost
there's two dominant, 1,000% dominant positions in a fight, and that's back and mount.
And he had both during the back.
Yeah, he had the back for a while too. Yeah.
It's a weird one. Like I said, like, listen, again, you got to win. That's what matters most. But you and I both know in the UFC's eyes, style points count. And I was for having that dominant of a position for that long, like you spent, I think they said like 21 minutes in that controlling position and you didn't get a finish and you didn't really do a ton of damage. I was like, it's weird to say this, but it's almost like his stock dropped with a win. You know what I mean? Like if he had gone out, because Derek Lewis was a replacement. He was supposed to fight Curtis Blaydes. If he had gone out there and done that to Curtis Blaydes, even though Curtis, you know, obviously coming off the loss to Sergey Pavlovich, that would say a lot because Curtis is such an incredible wrestler. I don't know that you could do that to Curtis Blaydes. But you go out there and do that to Derek Lewis, okay, still impressive, but then you have him mounted for 21 minutes or whatever and you don't get a finish and you don't do it. Like, you know how it works, Matt. Like, when you're in mount and you're just raining down punches, unless the guy does a good job of hipping out, escaping, or rolling, whatever, like, referees will stop the fight. Like if you're just bludgeoning him and he's just laying there covering up, like it may not be like the most emphatic stoppage, but the referee will generally step in. If you're just laying there getting punched, you know what I mean? He didn't really do so weirdly. Like he won, he got the main event, he beat Derek Lewis, but like weirdly, I'm like, man, like I don't feel like he really, raised the bar with that fight.
No, that's a good call. That's one of the interesting things about with the rules, right? Because I had one fight in particular. They stopped when I wasn't really that hurt. And, you know, when I thought about it later, you know, I was really pissed at the time. And I thought about it later, and I've seen this apply to other fights. You know, the rule is intelligent defense. Yeah. It's not necessarily whether you're rocked or not or whether you're hurt. It's whether you're intelligently defending. And, you know, so my point is, you know, I made a – again, don't want to knock the guy at all, like – I mean, it's amazing what he did, period, right? And he played a perfect strategy to get the win and do what he needs to do. But to your point, like, you don't have to rock him with those punches. Like, just throw punches.
Yeah.
Like, you're in mount. Like, he's not getting out.
Yeah.
Like, it was clear. Like, he's not getting out of your mount, right? He didn't have, like, any hip escapes. He didn't have any, you know, push on the knees or the hips or, you know, like, there wasn't any, like, technique there. It was, like... You know, Derek Lewis is going to try to stand up with power, and he wasn't able to do that. So just throw punches. But
yeah,
you know, who am I to say? Who are we to say standing outside?
Well, it's also like he called out Ciryl Gane afterwards, and I'm like, you call out Ciryl Gane, the guy who notoriously has bad grappling, you know, the guy who got, you know, taken down and grounded by Francis Ngannou and then got choked out by Jon Jones inside of 2 minutes or whatever it was. I was like, rebook the Curtis Blaydes fight because Curtis Blaydes is an incredible wrestler. If you can do that to Curtis Blaydes, I'll be super impressed. I don't think you can do that to Curtis Blaydes, so you're going to have to show other facets of your game. Not saying he can't win. He could absolutely win that fight, but you're probably not going to just win it by taking him down and controlling a guy like Curtis Blaydes, who is probably the best wrestler in the heavyweight division. Because in a perfect world, you go out there and you demolish Derek Lewis, then you can say, hey, Tom Aspinall, Sergey Pavlovich, I'm coming. Like, whoever wins this fight, I'm coming, because you know you're not getting Jon Jones Stipe. I'm coming for you. You make that kind of a statement going into this weekend, everyone's got Gilton Almeida on the mindset, oh, man, like, Sergey and Tom are the guys, but look at this Brazilian monster. Instead, here we are on Monday talking about, you know, he won. Yeah, he won, but, you know.
Yeah, that's a great point, because like you said, it's almost bizarre like how dominant he was and how little we were impressed, right? But to your point, look, if he could do that to Derek Lewis, if he could do that to Curtis Blaydes, rather, that is very impressive. And like we talk about all the time, styles make fights. Like, we know what Derek Lewis is. We know what Gilton Almeida is. We know what Curtis Blaydes is. And Derek's stock almost doesn't drop from that fight, right? Like nothing really changed other than we know that Gilton Almeida can out wrestle Derek Lewis.
I mean, yeah, that's really what we learned. And I'm like, all right, well, I probably kind of knew that going into it. So yeah, it was just a weird, like I said, it's weird to critique a guy who won like 50-45 across the board, but yet like coming out of it, I feel like his stock dropped a little bit, like because he had a lot of hype going into it, where people are saying, man, like the three horse race for like the best prospect at heavyweight was Pavlovich, Aspinall, and Gilton Almeida in terms of like the newer guys. And while I still think Gilton Almeida is really good, we're not necessarily putting him in that same conversation as the two guys right. fighting for the title this weekend. Like now, Aspinall and Pavlovich really does feel like the true, you know, interim title fight. And Gilton still feels like he's at least one fight away. Like he's got to beat a Cyril Gane. He's got to beat a Curtis Blaydes. Like if he had gone out there and demolished Derek Lewis, I'm not saying it would have put him like right there, but at least he would be in the conversation. It doesn't feel like he's really in that conversation today.
Yeah, and he almost did too. And it's one of those fights where, you know, I almost hate saying things like, you know, if it were, no rules or whatever. You know what I mean? I hate making this dash because it's a sport and we have the rules and that's what it is, right? But if it would have been one of those fights with no time round, no time limit, and just went, until a finish. You got a hard time believing that Derek Lewis doesn't eventually catch one of those uppercuts.
Yeah. And he came close a couple times.
He was getting
closer
every round, it felt like.
Yeah, he was. He was. Yeah, like I said, man, it is what it is. I mean, he got the win and, you know. But like I said, I don't think he got the statement he could have made with, like, a really big finish. You know what I mean? Because, again, and let me be clear about this. I like Derek Lewis. Like, he's a good, but Derek Lewis, like, I think we've proven who Derek Lewis is. Like, we know who Derek Lewis is. Like, he's not, he can still surprise us a little bit, like, when he throw a flying knee like he did in his last fight. But, you know, typically speaking, Derek Lewis at 38 or 39, like, he's kind of towards the latter part of his career. He's no longer a top, you know, five heavyweight. He had that brief moment where he kind of jumped up there. Like, we know who Derek Lewis is, right? Like, this fight was to show us who Gilton Almeida was. And, he did. I don't think that's the way he wanted to do it. You know what I mean?
Exactly,
like, I don't think that's, he came out of it and we're all kind of like, yeah, Gilton Almeida, way to go.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. Hopefully we get some more exciting fights next weekend, right?
Yeah.
Which I think we will.
You've been super high on the Sergey Pavlovich train for quite a while. But before I talk about that, because I know it's really crappy timing, because when we had the legend Mark Coleman on the show, we did a lot of talk about Stipe and John Jones because he was in Cleveland helping Stipe get ready. And we were all very excited. Then, like, days later, you know, the fight falls apart with Jones suffering an injury. I'm curious, like, it's weird because I had an interview, it'll drop this week, with Daniel Cormier. We were previewing UFC 295 and, you know, he had said something to me and I get it. He's like, we were talking about Jones Stipe and he said, you know, that's kind of like a fight that's bigger than the title in a way because both guys are so, you know, well known and it's such a, like a, you know, it's one of those like monumental super fights that we just want to see. But he's like, I think Pavlovich and Aspinall might be more competitive. Because he's like, listen, I love Stipe, but, you know, at 41, like, where is Stipe at? And by the time they fight next year, he's going to be 42. And one thing DC said to me that is absolutely a factor, he said, I remember what it was like for me at 41 training to fight Stipe Miocic. And he's like, I knew there was a difference. Like, I knew my body was not reacting the same way. It's harder to get up in the morning, like, little things like that. And he's like, Jones is still in the prime of his career. He's like, I don't know what we're going to get out of Stipe in that fight. And I was like, you're not wrong. Like, when you think about it, like, and Stipe, so by the time Stipe comes back next year, he's going to have been out for 3 years. Like, that's a long time at that age. You know what I mean? Like, at that age to be out, like, when he last fought, he was 39, and he's going to come back at 42. Like, that's a long time. So, I don't know, like, this was, like, did the card take a hit losing Jones Stipe? Absolutely. Like, that was a monster fight. Like, there's no way as many people are going to buy pay-per-views to watch Jiří and Alex Pereira and Sergey and Tom Aspinall as they would have bought for Stipe and Jones. Like, that would have been one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year. It's no longer that. But in terms of competitiveness, I don't disagree with DC when he talks about this being, on paper, a better fight. Like, in terms of, like, because Pavlovich has been a monster, 6 straight first-round knockouts, Aspinall, 6-1 in the UFC, same record as Sergey. He's only had one fight go to the second round, so this is a really intriguing fight.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I don't know why I think when you talk about competitiveness, I mean, I don't know if Stipe John Jones would have been competitive one way or another. I don't know if this one will be competitive one way or another, because this is fucking MMA, bro. And we get what we never expect to get. So I don't want to make that prediction, but on paper, yeah, I mean, this is just a great fight all around. And I think it's very understandable why the UFC is doing it the way they're doing it. I don't think it's a bad call. I think it's just an amazing fight, and it should be for the interim title the way they're doing it. So I love this fight.
In a way, like I said, I've said this to some other people, I think introducing the interim title in this particular instance is, I think it is to help sell pay-per-views a little bit, because you lost the title fight, you had a title fight. But let's be honest, Matt, and I know we've had this conversation a little bit before. When Jon Jones finally fights Stipe Miocic next year, and let's just say it happens at International Fight Week in 2024, there's a really good chance the winner and the loser in that fight retire. There's a really good chance that that's just a retirement fight for both guys. Because for Joe, like, I think there's a better chance of Jones sticking around, because if Jones wins, he might think, well, you know, maybe I'll stick around and defend the belt a couple of times and break the record. But even that, I would say, is like lower on the scale of possibilities. I know Stipe has not come out and said it publicly, and everything he's talked about is we'll see, we'll see. I think that's it. Like, what would, if Stipe beats Jon Jones, what is he coming back for? Like, what are you going
to
do at that point?
Have
like,
to come back for.
Yeah. So in a weird way, like, this fight at 295 is kind of crowning just a new heavyweight champion. Like, they're going to be called interim champion, but like the chances that Pavlovich or Aspinall ever get to fight Jones or Miocic is, in my opinion, slim to none.
Yeah. It's definitely lower. I didn't really think about it that way. I think that's true. I had kind of taken this as giving them the interim title as a way to introduce these guys to the world. Like, I mean, we all as casual or hardcore fans, we all know who Aspinall and Pavlovich are, but the regular fan maybe heard their name in passing or something, right? Like, they're not, you know, gigantic names like Jones and Miocic. So that's the way I took it, was like, they're showing the world, this is who these guys are. This is, you know, they got the belt, and when they put it out there to everyone, then it makes the, if Jones or Miocic doesn't retire, makes that fight even bigger.
Yeah. I just have a hard time believing it will happen. You know what I mean? Like, again, I think Jones, there's a possibility with Stipe. I don't think there's any, I think Stipe has one fight left and it's Jon Jones. And I think that's pretty much
it. Doesn't make any sense for Stipe to do more if he beats Jones, right? Like, what sense does he even make for him? I think he's set for life. I mean, he's older. Like, the only reason, you got to think, probably the only reason he's even fighting Jones is just for the legacy fight, right? Like, he's not coming back to prove anything. I don't think he's out there. Like, I don't think his motivation was to come back for a title. Like, it's Jon freaking Jones.
And rightly so. Like, you know, that's what I said. Yeah. Like, what would, like, unless Francis came back in the fold, which we all know is not going to happen, but because obviously they split a pair of fights, and I know Stipe wanted to come back and fight Francis to get that trilogy settled. You know what I mean? Kind of like what happened with DC with the Cormier thing. That's not available. So Ngannou's out of the picture. Okay, you fight Jon Jones, the greatest of all time. Why would you come back after that? Like, and that's as me as a Stipe, you and I are both Stipe guys here in Ohio. Like, what purpose would it serve for you to come back? And if you beat Jon Jones, like, you know, like,
I'll tell you what, I would love to see him come back and run this division, you know, like, it'd be pretty badass if he came back and beat Jones and then beat Aspinall and Pavlovich. Like, you know, I'm a cheer for Stipe all around, all the time, everything he does, man. So I think he'd be badass. Hard to see him doing that. Like, these are young, hungry guys. And, you know, that championship grind is another level, man. That's some work that we don't understand. So,
yeah. But also, I mean, listen, you know, Stipe's put in a lot of work. He's accomplished a lot of things. And at some point, you know, I mean, listen, everyone knows that, you know, time runs out for everybody. And if he goes out and he can actually beat Jon Jones, that's the biggest win ever. Like, you just beat the unbeatable. You just stopped the unstoppable. Why would you? Because, like, not saying he would taint his legacy if he came back and got knocked out by Pavlovich, but like, talk about like the emotional letdown of that, to go out and beat Jon Jones, and then 6 months later you got to get up and fight this young, hungry Russian, or this, you know, mauling Brit, who is just like, you know, waiting for a chance to beat a legend. I like I said, personally, I think Stipe's done. If Stipe fights John Jones next year, win or lose, I think that's the last time we see Stipe Miocic in the UFC.
Well,
that's
have
not
to interview Stipe and ask him, huh?
He'll never tell us. I know Stipe well enough. He'll play coy right up until the day he retires. But but that's also why I think this interim title's better, because Jones and Stipe are so big that while there's going to be a title on the line, let's be honest, that fight's about John Jones fighting Stipe Miocic. Like, that's the magnitude of that fight. Does having a title matter? Sure, it's fun. It adds a little extra oomph to the fight. But does it really matter when it's Jones? It's like if we would have seen GSP fight Anderson Silva back in the day, did we really care that much about titles being on the line? Or because we were going to see George St. Pierre fight Anderson Silva? Same thing here. Like, this is, and so, like, introducing the interim title here is perfect because, you know, they don't fight till July. At least you keep the division moving, because the way this is playing out, like, while I generally don't like interim titles, like, in the long run, like, we're going to talk about it in a second, but, like, we got Jiří Procházka fighting Alex Pereira for a vacant title because the light heavyweight title just keeps getting tossed out, won and lost. Like, guys keep getting injured, and, like, this division has gone through so much, like, craziness. I talked to Jamal Hill, and I was like, is there any part of you that, like, wishes you had just held onto the title and did an interim title? And he understood, because Jiří got injured and he gave up the title, so he kind of did the same thing. But, like, even when Jiří got injured with the shoulder injury, it's like, why didn't they just let him keep the belt and then you introduce the interim title for Jamal Hill and Glover? Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't typically like interim titles, but this is a scenario with this one, the heavyweight title fight, where it actually makes sense. And I think it actually would have made sense for light heavyweight as well.
Yeah, I don't think anyone likes interim titles, right? But it's just, there's a time and a place for it. And I think sometimes we start questioning whether it's kind of tossed out there a little bit too often, you know, like sometimes you're like, is that interim title really necessary? You know, is that really a title there?
Yeah, that's true. So what do you think? Aspinall or Pavlovich? How do you see this one going down? I know you're a big Sergey guy. You've been banging that drum for a long time. You were on the Sergey train even before I was. So I'm kind of curious. Like, and also, to his credit, Sergey was preparing as the backup. He was training to be the backup for Stipe and Jones. So he was already going through a training camp. Aspinall wasn't. I've heard Aspinall was training. Like, he's not a guy who leaves the gym. But you know, Matt, I know we've had this discussion, not to beat a dead horse here. You train in your gym every single day, but the way you train right now is not the way you train for a fight, when you're actually gearing up for a fight. So, yes, I've heard Aspinall was training, but he wasn't training for November 11th to fight Sergey Pavlovich. So, I don't know. Like, how do you feel about this one?
Boy, I mean, this is definitely a close one, man. But I lean towards Sergey. Mainly because of the power. Like, I think he's just such a sturdy, strong, durable, powerful guy. But man, you know, I'm not sure, you know, how much bigger Aspinall is going to be than him, like taller or lengthwise. And I think he's going to outsize him in that aspect some. And I think that could play a big part. And if Aspinall uses that properly and, you know, uses his jab or his length or whatever out there properly, I think that could go a long way, but I'm not sure how much he's going to outsize him in that regard.
Yeah, I think I'm going with Sergey as well. I just think the power and the preparation are the difference here. Like, he's got that nasty power, but he's also been training for this. Like, he's been training for the potential of going five rounds with John Jones. He's been training for the potential of going five rounds with Stipe Miocic. He's actually gone through a training camp, and this kind of goes back to what happened to UFC 294. As much as we want to talk up Alexander Volkanovski and Kamaru Usman for stepping in, they were still stepping in at a massive disadvantage. Like, they were still stepping in against guys who were going through a full training camp and preparing for that particular date, whereas they were coming off the couch. Like, that was the joke going into fight week. They're coming off the couch. Well, Aspinall's not necessarily coming off the couch, but we got to remember, he still took this fight on basically whatever it was, like 2 or 3 weeks' notice. It's certainly not ideal. The good side about that is they're heavyweights, and typically speaking, a lot of heavyweight fights end in the first or second round. You should probably have enough cardio to go that deep, but I'm a believer in Sergey Pavlovich. I think his power's real. Another thing DC said, he's like, this is the most powerful puncher we've seen since Francis. And I would agree, the way he just puts people out is just nasty. And he only needs one. He needs one to slip through, and he'll put you out. And so I think Sergey gets it done. I think he probably gets a knockout. And then maybe we see this rematch like a couple years down the road, and hopefully Aspinall will have more time to prepare. Aspinall's a monster, make no mistake about it. But
yeah.
I just think Sergey right now, like, I have a lot of confidence. I think that Curtis Blaydes fight really woke me up to how good he was.
And it's not, to me, it's not just his power. I mean, he's obviously a big, powerful guy, but he's very accurate with his punches. And that goes, especially with those 4 ounce gloves, it goes just as far as power. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to, like, I'm not a huge power guy, but I got the second most knockouts in the UFC, you know, like I'm not explosive like a Michael Chandler or anything, but you know, it's that accuracy, man. Connor talked about it, you know, kind of famously. So that's the one thing with Sergey that I seen. I think it was the Tai Tuivasa fight that really turned me, when I just seen how accurate his punches were, and I was like, damn, like, that's going to be a problem to deal with. But how he deals, again, I have to see the stats to see exactly how much reach Aspinall is going to have on him. And it may be a small amount, but there may not even be much at all. Like, even if Sergey has more reach, you know, I think that how that reach distance is kind of determined is going to determine the fight.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like I said, there's a lot to be said about, you know, obviously styles make matchups. Let's see here. Let me look. I'm pulling up some stats here right now. Let's see. Where are we at? Pereira. Where is the Aspinall? There we go. Pavlovic Aspinall. Let's see here. Pavlovic is 6'3". Aspinall is 6'5". Reach is actually, here's an interesting stat. Sergey Pavlovich, 84-inch reach. Tom Aspinall, 78-inch reach. He's got a 6-inch reach advantage on Tom Aspinall.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I was getting. I knew Aspinall was taller, but I wasn't sure how the reach would play out. And those stats also can be deceiving too, you know. So it depends on, and that's kind of what I was getting at there. It's going to depend a lot on who actually uses their reach better, I think.
Yeah.
You know, who's able to kind of start gauging that distance and infiltrating the distance a little bit better, you know, whether that's through a jab or through, you know, combinations. Sergey seems to me like he does his best work when he's able to start getting combos going, right? When he's able to start applying some pressure and getting you at the end of his punches. So I think that that's going to be the big part. And that doesn't mean that Aspinall, even if he's got the shorter reach, especially being the taller man, it doesn't mean he can't out jab him, right? And maintain and control that distance. And, you know, even if I got the shorter reach and I'm Aspinall, that's the game that I'm going to start working towards first. Whether you could use teep kicks or, you know, whatever, but start winning that range battle and forcing Sergey to try to come in. So to me, it's a matter of whether Sergey's able to breach that distance, start landing his big shots. Cause like you said, it's not going to take very many from him.
Here's the one thing I'll say, and I know people are going to be like, dude, you're a hater. I'm not a hater because I've spent the last 2 weeks on this show praising Francis Ngannou left, down, and center in terms of his performance. But when you watch Francis in the UFC, at least in a lot of his fights, he did rely solely on power. It wasn't necessarily the best technique in the world because he just was so – like when you watch him knock out Jairzinho Rozenstrike, he's literally just swinging for the fences and he just knocks him in the middle next week. Now, we know from his fight with Tyson Fury and his win over Stipe that he does have good boxing when he controls himself, and I think that was a product – of fighting a guy like Stipe, who also has good boxing. He knew he couldn't just go in there and overwhelm Stipe with just throwing big looping punches. Where I like what Sergey does, what you mentioned, is he's got a good jab. Like, he's got a good, accurate jab that sets up his other punches. I would argue that Sergey is on equal footing in terms of danger, what he presents with Francis, like when he was in the UFC in terms of power. The difference that I give Sergey credit for earlier is, as you said, the accuracy. He does set up a jab, which is something Francis didn't really do a lot in his UFC fights. Now, Francis was clearly a more accomplished fighter by this point, and I think that Stipe fight was really the one that showed how amazing he could be on the feet. But he was still like, he would still use a lot of fights just overwhelming people with power. He didn't necessarily go in there thinking, I'm going to set up my jab. I'm going to out technique him and then knock him out. He would just kind of like, oh, this guy can't take my power. I'm just going to knock the piss out of him. Sergey does. Sergey actually said like that Blaze fight, man, he popped him with several hard shots from a distance and didn't just explode forward and go crazy. Like he set up things, stuffed the takedown, and then went out and knocked him out. And I think that's super impressive with Sergey.
Yep, and that's why I said that's going to be the telltale sign of who wins this fight, and that's going to be the deal breaker who wins this fight, I think. Because I think Aspinall, again, being the taller guy, you know, those reach stats, they can be very deceiving. You know, like I had a friend back in the day who was about a 5'7" wrestler, but he had the same reach that I did. But it's because his lats were absolutely massive. I take that back. His wingspan was the same. So when they measure like knuckle to knuckle, like it was about the same as mine. It was a little bit less, but pretty comparable. And because, I mean, his lats and shoulders were absolutely massive,
yeah.
You know, which was great for wrestling too, right? So those stats can be very deceiving. But that's why I said whoever is able to set that range well, because Aspinall, I don't think that Aspinall can sit in the pocket and trade with Sergey, and I think that's where he could potentially run into trouble. I think he has a lot of ways to win this fight, but I think that's where the trouble would be for him. So setting that range is going to just be huge for him, and that's why I lean towards Sergey, because I think Sergey will be able to deal with that range well enough. And now that you're putting out the reach stats, it kind of convinces me even more he'll be able to find a way to get around it.
Yeah.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down, and new customers to DraftKings can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
In the co-main event, of course, we got Jiří Procházka against Alex Pereira, and every single person I've talked to about this fight has pretty much the same opinion, which is Jiří takes a lot of chances and takes a lot of risks, which is dangerous against a guy like Alex Pereira. But the downside of this is we're still, in a lot of ways, figuring out who Alex Pereira is. Even 10 fights into his career and 6 fights in the UFC or whatever it's been, like, we're still trying to kind of figure out who this guy is, because he's such an incredible kickboxer. But you know, is he really developed as a ground fighter? But then the flip side is that Jiří likes to take... Jiří has not gone through a single fight in his UFC career where he hasn't gotten rocked a little bit on the feet. Like, he did it against Dominic Reyes. He did it against Volkan Ozdemir. He did it against Glover Teixeira. He's just a guy who's willing to take chances. Like, he's like, I'll take your best punch, and I'll give you my best punch, and I'm guaranteeing my best punch is better. That's kind of like the Jiří philosophy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's a dangerous game to play with Alex Pereira, but at the same time, you know, one takedown from Jiří could end the fight. Like, that's how it could end up. So I'm like, I'm kind of torn on this one. Like, my gut says Jiří Prochazka, he's the better, more rounded, well-rounded fighter, and I think he has more ways to win, but I don't know, man. Like, when you're that nasty of a kickboxer, it does only take one from Alex Pereira, and he'll put your lights out.
Yeah, and you're talking about one of the wildest, strangest fighters in Jiří Prochazka that we've ever seen, right? He throws some of the most insane techniques we've ever seen. I mean, he's just a very unique guy all around, right? And when he fights, it's always a very unique fight, right? Against a guy that we haven't seen a lot in MMA, right? We don't even, like you said, we don't even really know who Alex Pereira is all the way around in MMA. We know who he is as a kickboxer, and we know he can do a lot of that in MMA. But this is a real, like, wild card fight, you know? And it's good. I think it's a very, very difficult fight to pick. I'd be curious what the odds are in this fight.
Jiří's
probably
Jiří's favorite, but it's very small. It's not a big favorite.
I was gonna say, it's got to be close to even. I got to think.
Yeah.
Maybe with Jiří a slight favorite, but
yeah,
and that's probably because, like, he throws those wild techniques, and you know, when you ain't used to seeing that stuff, or you're not used to sparring with guys like that, which you can't, you know, how do you train for Jiří Prochazka? Right? Like, who do you bring in to do that? You can't find someone. So you're going to see things in the octagon that you've probably never seen before in your life. And if those things take you off, especially like when you're trying to, like, time someone and you're finding that certain rhythm that they're bringing to you, and you're like, okay, I got it. And then he throws something just completely out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
You know, it can really throw you off a lot, especially when you've sparred guys for years or fought guys for years that fell for that trap.
Yeah. You know, those giant blow up doll things they put outside, like, car dealerships, like, they have the things where they have, like, the waving arms, you know what I'm talking about? Like, the big, like, that's what Jiří Prochazka is. Like, you can't really see, he just kind of goes up and throws things and his arms are everywhere. And, like, he's all over the place. Like
the first time someone tries to hit the double in bag and it's just bouncing back and forth.
Yeah. Like, it's just so, and you're right. Like, how do you train for that guy? Cause you can't, cause he's so weirdly creative. Like, you can't. And also, and you and I know this, sometimes when fighters have that creativity, their opponents will over prepare for that. Like, they'll over prepare for the weirdness and they'll miss the jab, or, you know, they'll miss just a straight hook coming at them because they're so concerned about the spinning elbows and the weird wheel kicks. And, you know, they start thinking about the, I got to look out for all the weird stuff. And then they miss the simple stuff.
That's a good call. Yeah. And it also, you know, for on Jiří's side, it's a little bit of a kamikaze style. You know, he's kind of a kill or die type guy. And like you said, against Pereira, boy, that's a dangerous thing. That's a dangerous, dangerous game to play.
It is. It is. But you know
what? We also haven't seen Alex at 205 either.
Yeah. I mean, well, you saw him against Jan. He fought Blahovic. He had that one fight. But yeah, I mean, he didn't.
Yeah,
he didn't. You know, and he won. I thought he won the fight. It was a close fight, but I thought he won. I think what Alex Pereira has done this early in his UFC career is pretty phenomenal to actually get to this point. But yeah, I have to lean Jiří just because, and again, a lot of my picks, when I pick a fight like this, that's kind of a toss up, I always go back to who has more ways to win. And I think Jiří has more ways to win because Jiří has gone five rounds. Jiří has won fights on the ground. Jiří has won fights on the feet. Jiří, we've seen it. Now, does he take chances and take risks that could backfire? Absolutely. But I have a little bit more faith in what he's done at 205. Whereas Alex has one fight at light heavyweight. Does he still have the same power? Can he still put people away the same way he did at middleweight? Does he have a ground game to deal with Yuri? I mean, Yuri tapped out Glover Teixeira on the ground. Glover Teixeira is one of the nastiest ground guys in the world, and he tapped out Glover Teixeira. So anything's possible, but I have to lean Yuri just because I think he has more ways to win this fight. And I think that that makes a difference in terms of like a fight that I'm having trouble picking. I always like to fall down on the side of who has more ways to win. I think Yuri has more ways to win.
I'm contradict you. I'll take Alex on this fight. And, you know, I'm very slight lean, only because I'm generally all that wild stuff, I think, works up to a certain level. And I think that Alex is above that level. Now, if it hits the ground, you know, I mean, I think Yuri's going to have a pretty significant advantage. But we don't really know where Alex is on the ground at this point. But I forgot that he'd fought at 205 before. You're right. But when it comes to high level kickboxing, striking, you know, I lean towards the fundamental guy that has better fundamentals.
Yeah. So we're mostly talking about UFC 295, but, you know, we're kind of a live thing happening here. Big fight announcement just made, just broke as we're talking. So we might as well react to it. Dana White just announced the main event for UFC 297 on January 20th in Toronto will be Sean Strickland putting his middleweight title on the line against Dricus du Plessis. He gets his title fight.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So Dricus is getting his title
fight. Good for Dricus, man. He earned it.
You kind of feel bad for the guy after what happened with the whole, you know, the disaster with him not being able to fight Israel in September. And you kind of felt like, man, are they just going to punish this guy? And here comes Khamzat. And they're like, Khamzat gets the title shot. And then they end up going back to Dricus. So it's going to be Dricus du Plessis against Sean Strickland. That's a really interesting matchup, man. Like I said, Sean Strickland proved me so wrong beating Israel Adesanya that way. But, man, the way Dricus beat Robert Whittaker, that was such a wake-up call. I've never seen – I mean, did Israel beat Robert Whittaker in their first fight in similar fashion? But the way Dricus beat Robert Whittaker, I was like, holy crap, man. This dude's a monster.
And the way Dricus just finds a fucking way, man. You know, this guy just – He doesn't look like the most phenomenal guy out there. He doesn't look like, you know, the most fundamental, the most technical, the strongest, the fastest. Like, he doesn't have that one thing that stands out, you know, but he finds a goddamn way, man. So you got to give it to him. And yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how Strickland, how he matches up with Strickland. I think that's going to be really, really interesting because I think Strickland definitely does well against the technical guys like Adesanya. Things would be interesting to see how he does against, I mean, I'm sure we could go back and watch his fights, but to see him against someone not quite as conventional and not as, I don't know, definitely not as technical, not sure the term I'm looking for, but maybe, you know, a little bit more, not as easy to guess what they're about to do, you know?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. And then on top of that, we got two more fights announced for February and March. February, we're getting Alexander Volkanovski against Ilya Topuria. And then in March, we are getting Sugar Sean O'Malley against Chito Vera, the rematch. They are doing the rematch after all in March.
I can take that.
So obviously Volkanovski and Topuria, we all kind of knew that was coming. I am curious to see how Alex comes back from the knockout. First time he's had that happen in the UFC. Is there an emotional letdown? I don't know. He didn't do it last year when he lost to a really close fight to Islam and then came back and just beat the brakes off Yair Rodriguez. So I am curious.
No, it's going to fire him up more.
Yeah, and Ilya Topuria is a monster. But Matt, I got to be honest, man. Like, I like Chito Vera. I really do. But this is like the pure promotional title fight. Like, the fact that O'Malley is getting Chito is 100% like the Conor show, right? Like, this is the Conor McGregor, I'm a star, so I'm going to call my shot treatment. Like, let's be honest about this.
Yeah, fair enough. But, dude, I kind of hope Chito can get it done. And not because I hate Sean O'Malley, but because I love Chito so much, man. And he's definitely the type. We've seen enough of his fights. We know this guy can fucking pull it out, man. And then he finally getting a title fight. Yeah, this could be. I think it's going to be a better fight than I think. A lot of people are going to assume Sean O'Malley is going to kind of walk through him, even though, you know, what happened in the first fight happened. you know, and we both agreed, I think when we talked about it before, like Sean O'Malley's probably made bigger improvements, at least from what we've seen. Like Sean O'Malley's the star. Sean O'Malley's looking absolutely phenomenal. But man, Cheeto, this guy's got, I think he's got a fire under his ass. I think he might be able to pull this out.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, like I said, this is, I mean, listen, when you get an opportunity like this, when everyone is telling you you don't deserve this, like, you know, right. no one is sitting there saying, man, he's on a one fight win streak over a late notice a replacement opponent. Like, it's not like he went out there and, you know, he tore through Merab and Aljamain and all this kind of stuff. Like, he's on a one fight win streak. He's getting this because he has a win over Sean O'Malley. That's the reason he's getting this. So make the most of it. Like, make the most of this opportunity, mm-hmm. because if you lose here, you're probably not going to get another one. Like, maybe, I'm not saying ever, but like, it's going to take a lot for you to get back there again to get another title shot against anyone that's champion. You're getting this because you had the Willy Wonka golden ticket. You have the win over Sean O'Malley, so you're getting the title shot. Make the most of it. Do not waste this opportunity. I don't think he will. I'm just saying, like, I think that's the magnitude of this for Cheeto Vera. But Cheeto's a gamer, man. Like, he's never going to just fade away and go away for anybody. I mean, even the fights he's lost, it's not like he's gone out there and just absolutely gotten decimated. You know what I mean? Like, he stood with Corey Sandhagen, who I think is one of the best strikers in the entire sport. And he did he lose? Yes, he lost the fight, but he still stood toe-to-toe with Corey Sandhagen, and I think he can do the same thing to Sean O'Malley. I won't be shocked if Cheeto pulls this off.
That's it, right? You're not going to be shocked. Boy, that kind of gets me fired up, man. I love Cheeto. I love watching him fight. And the way Sean O'Malley's been looking these last few fights, you know, I was never a big Sugar Sean guy. Like, I never thought he would get to the title. I thought he would get smashed by Aljamain. You know, I was never on that Sugar train, but he has proved me wrong time and time again. So I got to believe in what he's doing. But boy, I kind of believe more in what Sean's doing, but I like watching Cheeto more. You know what I mean? I'm stoked for that guy. I think he's such a great guy, and I'd love to see him go out there and get it done.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, I think O'Malley's made a lot of improvements since then, and I would lean towards O'Malley right now in the moment. You know, like, I just think he's done more and improved more than Cheeto has, but Cheeto's a gamer, and you can never count him out. So it's a really interesting fight. And also, you know, I mean, listen, this kind of reminds you of when Michael Bisping became champion, and they didn't make him fight Robert Whittaker. They gave him Dan Henderson because he wanted to avenge the loss to Dan Henderson from UFC 100. And so they rebooked that fight, and it ended up being a really good scrap. It ended up being a really fun fight, but that's why it happened. And that's why this is happening. Like, Merab Dwalishvili is getting screwed. Like, there's no way around it. He should without a doubt be fighting for the title right now. As much as I like Cheeto, and I do like Cheeto, this comes at the expense of Merab Dwalishvili, and that sucks. Like, he really, like, it breaks my heart, man. He's done everything he could, and to me, it's a bummer that it seems like he's getting passed over, because at one point he said, "I don't want to fight my friend."
Yeah, and I guess he'll probably he'll have to wait, which sucks.
Sounds like he's going to fight.
The next shot.
Sounds like he's going to fight Cejudo. Is the rumor he's going to fight Cejudo? Ooh. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, if he wins that, then, you know, it makes it even tougher to pass him up, right? Yeah.
And wait, like, I know I say it on the show all the time, Matt. Like, if you're an MMA fan, just strike the word "deserves" from your vocabulary. Like, should we just does merit even matter anymore? Like, really? Like, I mean, listen, Dricus du Plessis earned it, but if they would have given Khamzat the shot, would we have been that surprised? Like, if Khamzat just got, you know what I mean? Like, does merit even matter anymore, really? Like, is it just it about name power? Like,
yeah, I guess it's a combination nowadays, right? Like, you got to have, you know, if you want it, the faster that you, the more prominent you are, the faster your path is going to be, right? It's not one or the other, you know. Yeah. But of course you do. You know, it is the UFC still. Like, you still have to go out there and win fights, right? Merit's still going to matter, just not as much if you're more prominent.
Yeah, I mean, you can skip the line. Like, you know, Sean O'Malley Yeah, Sean O'Malley beating Petr Yan was a big win, but that's his one win he had. Like, he didn't have, like, a long string of top 10 wins to get to Aljamain. He got the fight with Aljamain because he's Sean O'Malley. Like, did he win against Petr Yan to get it? Sure, but he made the fast ascension because he's a star. You know, like, Connor beating Dennis Seaver doesn't necessarily make you the number one contender, but he's Conor McGregor, so he gets, you know, whatever that is. You know what I mean? Like, that's like when you're a star, all bets are off. Like, all bets are off on what you can ask for, what you can get, who your opponents are going to be. Like, all that goes out the window when you actually draw that many eyeballs.
Yeah, and like Tony Ferguson had like what, 12 in a row, and got the interim title or something, I think. So you just. It's a combination of the two, right? And you know, we understand what the UFC's model is and why they do what they do. Like, it's hard to hate on it. But, you know, I think me and you are on the same page. We like seeing those guys that deserve it get it, right? That's what we want to see as hardcore fans. Like, we're way more interested in seeing a guy work his way up there. You know, the number one ranked guy, we would rather see Merab get the fight.
Yeah, and I think that's, like, we get it. We understand it. And I think the only time it really irritates me is in a situation like this. Like, there is a clear-cut number one contender. Like, when George St. Pierre fought Nick Diaz back in the day, I loved that fight. Like, Nick Diaz, a legend. But Johnny Hendricks was on, like, a 7-fight win streak, and, you know, he was the number one contender, clearly the number one contender, and they gave it to Nick Diaz over him. And it's kind of the same thing here. Like, if Merab didn't exist, I would say, sure, give it to Cheeto. I don't care. But because Merab's out there, I'm kind of like, man, this sucks. Like, again, we argue for Dracus, same kind of thing. Now, he's getting it, but I think he's getting it because Khamzat's injured. Khamzat has a torn ligament in his hand, and they need a main event January 20th, or it would be Khamzat and Sean Strickland. Like, he's getting it.
The hard part, too, is, you know, I mean, we feel bad for Merab for not getting the title shot, but now he's got to go fight Henry Cejudo. It's not like he gets a tune-up fight or a keep warm fight, you know, keep them in there and keep everything sharp to get ready for that title fight. Like, now you got to go fight one of the greatest combat sports athletes of all time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, here's your consolation prize. Go fight one of the greatest champions ever and an Olympic gold medalist. Yeah,
and look, if he loses that fight, you know, that changes the trajectory of his life, you know? So,
yeah.
You know, it's certainly not too cool, but it is what it is, man. This is the world we live in right now.
The UFC is kind of like just beat us down, where we're just kind of like, yeah, I kind of expected this.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week to break down everything that happened at UFC 295 in a matter of days. Obviously, there are fights beyond the two title fights, but of course, that's what we want to focus on today. So we'll get back into that next week and kind of break down everything that happened at UFC 295 and our thoughts on the fights. I assume you'll be watching this weekend, Max. I know I will be.
I should be watching. Yeah, yep, I should be. I have a seminar Saturday, so I imagine I'll probably stay there. It's in Kentucky. I'll probably stay the night and watch the fights with the guys down there, have some good times. I teach some guys some martial arts techniques. That's what I do. So if anybody listening ever wants a seminar, you know who to hit up.
There you go. I love it. And anywhere else, anyone that wants to check out, of course, to support you and the people who support you, Matt, where can they find
it? Well, if they want a seminar or want to learn about martial arts or what I got going on, at I Am The Immortal on Twitter and Instagram. Or if you want to get jacked, at The Immortal Coffee.
There you go. I love it. We will be back next week, as I said, talking about UFC 295, the fallout from that card. See if Matt or I, we agreed on Sergey, but we split on the actual main event between Jiří and Alex. So we'll see who has bragging rights next week on the show. We appreciate everyone that tunes in each and every week to the show. Make sure you check us out on all your favorite podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and, of course, over on the best website in the world, MMAfighting.com. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of The Fighter versus The Writer. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Media Podcast Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.